This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9. Welcome to the Rainbow Report. News, opinion, current affairs for the Rainbow community from Joy 94.9. Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station. Gay and lesbian radio station. And now your host, Doug Pollard. Doug Pollard.
News and interviews. Joy 94.9.
Yes, this is Doug Pollard. Thank you to Chris and Cam for your drive factory. Good evening and welcome to the Rainbow Report on Risks with me and my trusty sidekick. No, it's not Robin, it's James Newbury. Good evening, James.
Good evening, Doug.
He's a happy boy because he's going on holiday soon, so you should be able to hear the smile in his voice.
I am so happy I'm going to China because I like noodles and that's all.
And it's the one place that North Korea isn't going to nuke.
It's a bonus,
it's a bonus, yes. Anyway, you're avoiding the risk of a nuke from North Korea. We're talking about risk tonight. You can't live life, of course, without risk. Some are completely unavoidable. Others you can try to avoid. The one thing you shouldn't do is pretend they're not there. For a start, air travel is risky, but has it just got riskier for passengers on Qantas? The airline with the gay CEO is busy jollificating in Dubai at the moment, celebrating their link up with the Emirates airline. That's why no spokesperson from either the flying kangaroo or the flying token hijab was available to talk to you tonight. But for people who are gay, unmarried, carrying essential medications, have Israeli stamps in their passports, to name just a few, does this funneling of all Qantas passengers through this extremely conservative Arab Muslim state represent a risk? Safe enough if you don't leave the airport, I'm told. But if problems mean the airline has to put you up in the city overnight, what then? We talked to Chief Opposition Whip in the Senate, Senator Helen Kroger. She raised the issue in Parliament and she's worried. She tells us why. Sex. Well, there you go. Got your attention. Sex is inherently risky, but it just got a bit riskier if you're an MSM, a man who has sex with the men, that's the politically correct term, and you're on your way to New York, and double so if you're HIV positive. A dangerous form of meningitis is spreading among gay men there. The local health authority has issued a warning to all gay men in all parts of New York to be vaccinated against meningitis. And travel advisories have been put out here to tell us if we want to go to New York, we should be vaccinated too. We'll talk to Rob Lake of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations. And I wonder, you know, lots of gay men from New York come here. Should the rest of us be getting vaccinated? One thing that puts you at greater risk is something you can't avoid, getting older. It can be especially trying for LGBTI seniors whose needs and concerns are not always understood or met. That's one of the themes of next week's Health in Difference conference. The general manager of the LGBTI Health Alliance, Warren Talbot, is running the ageing stream there and we'll be talking to him. And last but not least, you wouldn't have thought you were going to be at risk in the streets of Sydney during Mardi Gras, one of the few times of the year when gay takes over and we all have a good time. This year, however, some revellers were at risk from the very people meant to be protecting them, the police. The New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, the Mardi Gras and ACON have all joined now for a petition to force a debate in the state parliament on establishing an independent body to investigate complaints about the New South Wales police. So what happened there? I thought we'd sorted all that out in the forum. Rights Lobby co-convener Justin Coonan is waiting on the line to tell us all about it and why they've taken what seems to me a rather extraordinary step. And this is your host, Doug Pollard. You're on Joy 94.9. James Newbury assisting, as they say in court. There was some disquiet over policing methods during Mardi Gras. They then followed a public forum at which the police appeared conciliatory. So why have the lead gay body in New South Wales apparently upped the ante by calling for a new independent body to investigate police behaviour? Justin Coonan, the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby co-convener, I get my tongue to work tonight.
It's horrible.
It's jumpy, isn't it? Is on the line. Good evening, Justin.
Good evening.
So why do we need to have this petition and go after the police like this?
So to start with, I should say, as indeed you have, that the point of the petition is to force a debate in the New South Wales Assembly over the establishment of an independent investigatory body for police. And I think it's important to realise that this is not a new issue, and it's also not an issue which just affects the LGBTI community, of course. Mm-hmm. And so independently of the outcome of the inquiries into the three events which were widely reported post Mardi Gras, this is important for many communities. Community Legal Centres New South Wales, for example, published a detailed report on exactly this issue last year. And indeed, we have broad support, not just within the LGBTI community, but outside it as well. This is simply a matter of international best practice. There are other jurisdictions. The UK is one example where police investigation is handled better than it is here. The events of Mardi Gras have focused attention on the issue, and that's why we're particularly taking this step now. But it's an important one in a far more general context than just the events of Mardi Gras.
Yeah, because, on the one hand, I understand why people got upset over what happened at Mardi Gras. But after that initial video came out, for example, there was a second one which seemed to give some kind of backing to the police action. It wasn't quite as clear-cut as we thought at first. He wasn't just sort of, wading in with no provocation. There had been some. And I thought, to some extent, that had all been dealt with at this police forum. Are you saying that you feel you can't actually get satisfaction dealing direct with the police anymore?
I don't think that's true. I think from the beginning, from the time this incident happened, we've received assurances from the Premier and the Police Minister and the Commissioner that they are taking these matters seriously. I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. But certainly given the amount of media and public attention that's been focused on the issue, there's a good chance they will. But as I said before, this issue is not simply about what happened to two people on the night of Mardi Gras. There are broader issues of policing in the LGBTI community, both around the Mardi Gras Festival, the four organisations you mentioned, Inner City Legal Centre, the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, Mardi Gras and ACON received many more complaints than two or three, obviously not quite as extreme around the Mardi Gras season. Yeah. And also stretching back a number of years. And while we've made tremendous progress with our relationship with New South Wales Police, there's still work to be done. And then, of course, there is also the issue of how policing affects other communities. And, example, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, migrants, young people.
Was it a bit of a shock, the events at Mardi Gras? Did you think your relationship of the community between our community and the police was better than it turned out to be as a result of those incidents?
Well, I think that video in particular, the first video, was quite distressing to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And while the relationship between our community and our police has come on leaps and bounds from the early years, I think it brought back memories for people. It was very triggering.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned other incidents other than what happened there. And I remember from, Alex Greenwich said he'd received an awful lot of information about complaints of various things. One issue that seemed to have cropped up quite a bit was the behaviour of the police at dance parties, in particular bringing sniffer dogs into the parties and conducting some rather insensitive strip searches. Are those the sort of incidents you're referring to?
Yeah, a lot of the other complaints were around searches and the use of sniffer dogs. That's true, and that's certainly another issue that we need to look at.
Do you want to see the police not bring sniffer dogs into the parties?
Well, I think police need to seriously consider their use of sniffer dogs. The New South Wales Ombudsman released a report in 2006 on the use of sniffer dogs. And that report said the starting point has to be, do we consider maintaining this act and the use of sniffer dogs? A lot of research and the Ombudsman's report have shown that they're horribly ineffective. Mm-hmm. Only one person in four who actually gets searched or who gives a positive indication turns out to be carrying prohibited substances.
Is this a problem at other events, or is it just at gay dance parties?
No, I think that's general, and the Ombudsman's report certainly reflected general policing across the community. So again, this is not particularly an LGBTI issue, but it also affects other communities, and in particular with the issue of drug searches. Overwhelmingly, it's young people who may not have a voice to speak out against what's happening.
Okay, James.
Justin, I just have a question for you. The point of your petition is to force a debate in the parliament. What if the government and opposition agree that the police are doing a fabulous job and the debate's nothing more than fierce agreement? What will that mean?
I think that would be unfortunate, and I also have to admit that we don't know what the outcome of this will be. The way the procedures work, if a petition gets 10,000 signatures, that issue must be discussed in Parliament. We know that we have allies in Parliament who will speak in favour of it, so it's not going to be shut down immediately. Mm-hmm. But whether the government will be willing to change or willing to consider other options, we don't know, but we can only try. Certainly if we have the voices of 10 or 20 or 30, you know, we'd like 50,000 signatures.
Yeah.
At least people will take notice.
Yeah, well, you're certainly raising the profile of the issue. It's a bit of a high risk strategy, given that, as you say, we've developed the community has developed what appears to be a pretty reasonable relationship with the police. And of course, this is one thing the police don't like is being investigated by other people, because they say other people can't do it. You know, so
maybe so, but there are reasons why this might actually act to the police's advantage, because mm-hmm. it gives them the possibility of being seen as having no possibility of having bias in their investigation. So it actually could be a positive thing for police. At the community forum you were talking about, the local area commander, Superintendent Tony Crandall, said he'd be only too pleased if he didn't have to do all these investigations of complaints.
Yeah.
So it's not clear-cut that this would be a bad thing for police.
Okay, well, we'll have to see how it goes. I have put a link to your petition details on my blog for the programme, so people can go there and find it. They can do that via the Joy website. Justin?
And if I can add very quickly, what we'd love people to do is follow that link, download the petition, take it to your friends and family.
Yeah, because it has to be a physical signature on a piece of paper, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Which they have to send in to you.
Or photocopied or faxed, and you actually have to sign it with a pen and send it into us.
Right. So pencils won't do. All right. Thanks very much for joining us tonight, Justin.
Thank you very much.
Now, next weekend, Melbourne plays host to the LGBTI Health Alliance National Conference, Health in Difference. The General Manager, Warren Talbot, will be there chairing discussion on GLBTI, ageing and healthcare. He joins us next. Are you an LGBTI senior? What are you anxious about as you get older? What risks worry you?
Joy 94.9, The Rainbow Report. News, opinion and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
And this is your host, Doug Pollard, ably assisted this evening by Mr. James Newbury, who's getting what my father would have called a demob happy ahead of his trip to China at the weekend.
There's only one China.
There is only one China, yes. Remember that. Never mention Taiwan. This program, along with many other people, including my next guest, has been fighting to get the exemptions that allow religious aged care service providers, not just residential homes, by the way, removed. So that these providers can't refuse to help LGBTI seniors. This is only one of the risks, however, that seniors in our community face, as he knows. He's the general manager of the National LGBTI Health Alliance. His name's Warren Talbot. Good evening, Warren.
Hello, Doug. Hello, James.
Now, tell us, you're running the ageing stream, are you not, at the upcoming conference in Melbourne?
Yes, we have a very strong stream on ageing and aged care at the conference that is in Melbourne starting Thursday of next week. And we're looking at, among other things, the Commonwealth Government national strategy on LGBTI ageing and aged care.
Now, we lost the battle with the Sex Discrimination Act about these religious exemptions, but I understand they're going to come back in when the government enacts its new aged care brings in its new Aged Care Act. Do you have any more information about that?
I can't say much more, Doug, other than the fact that the Alliance and a number of organisations have been working quite hard to see if we can save some of those measures. And the ones we're particularly concerned about, there's a whole general issue in terms of exemptions,
yes,
which we could talk about, but we're highly focused on the delivery of sensitive health and aged care services,
yep,
where we think individuals and couples should not face discrimination, and that discrimination should in fact actually be outlawed. So that's what we're working to achieve.
Okay, James.
Warren, the first generation of our gay elders is about to go into care, and I'm really worried for them. I mean, are they just going to be shoved back into the closet?
James, I don't think it will be as straightforward as that exactly. So I think Doug is is hinting at the resilience of our elders. So that's one point. But apart from legislation, I think it's very important that a number of aged care providers are LGBTI positive. So in addition to working with members of parliament to get the legislation improved, one of the things the Alliance is doing is we're working very actively with a range of aged care providers for them to adopt things like a charter of service delivery. So that the different providers will say, even if we're allowed to discriminate, we voluntarily decide we will not do that.
But why would they be fighting so hard to keep these exemptions in place?
I think that what's going on in terms of members of parliament is a perception of community standards, when in fact community standards have shifted.
I see.
And I think it's a case of members of parliament catching up with community values. For example, Catholic Healthcare Australia has put out a very good policy document about inclusion without regard for sexual orientation or gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has to be followed through and implemented, but I think it might be a case where some members of parliament are trailing the community.
Well, yes. So, Warren, what kind of issues are our gay elders going to face coming to care? What are you trying to address? What are you trying to deal with?
The issues in terms of the national strategy start from day one, which is the gateway into the system. This is a new Commonwealth government initiative where someone's looking at their options for aged care, that they will be phoning up a new service, and we're working very hard with the industry and the government to make sure that service has appropriate questions, appropriate resources, appropriate referrals for intersex, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people.
The alphabet soup can get really complicated sometimes, so we just say gender-diverse people sometimes on Joy.
Well, it's interesting, James, the legislation now does refer to LGBTI, which is the name of the Health Alliance, but that's now in legislation, and I suspect, given that is now in legislation, over the next decade, we will see that very much consolidated as the acronym that's used to refer to our community.
It's rather a pity then that some segments of the community want to move us on from that one and have SGD for sex and gender diverse instead, because they think LGBTI is getting too long.
Yes, it is. Actually, I've seen it rendered quite long, but that's not
the
story.
But we won't go into that again.
No. So my question is, a lot of aged care seems to be predicated on the assumption that the person in care has children, and a lot of gays simply through, well, circumstance, I suppose, didn't have children. So how are these issues managed in the aged care sector?
One part of that, and only one part, the Alliance has signed a contract with the Commonwealth Government for $2 million over the next 3 years for us to run tailored training packages for the aged care sector. So it's a matter of working at all levels. At the one level, there's the legislation. At another level, there's the policy of aged care providers. And then in the very practical sense, the Alliance has now secured funding to run professional training for aged care services. So it's a matter of pressing on, yep, on all of these fronts, sort of almost at the same time.
Yeah, well, that's the key thing, isn't it? It's the training, because there's no point in trying to set up specific aged care homes just for LGBTI, because there's just not enough of us. You know, there's not enough demand in enough places around the country to make that worthwhile. I mean, this is something they've done quite successfully in America, but then again, they've got a huge population compared to us. Have you thought in terms of, for example, where sheltered housing is being built or is available as part of a complex, of negotiating to have, say, a certain number of units set aside for LGBTI residents?
The Alliance hasn't actually looked at that, so that's something something we should add to our the range of things that we're pressing for. I guess we've been focused on the critical issue of getting a national strategy. And that's the importance of the national strategy is it means those ideas and lots of others. It's sort of like a foot in the door.
Yeah, but the key thing will be making sure that something workable happens on the ground. I mean,
absolutely.
You've got to do this. I know you've got to do the work to put the policy in place, and I know you've got to do the work to get the changes into the legislation and so on and so forth. But the critical thing is what happens when the rubber meets the road.
Mm.
I mean, we've found this to some extent with the money that's steadily being put into GLBTI youth mental health, for example. There are beginning to be questions raised about how much of this is being spent effectively, and are we going around, spending it in the right way? One of the things I guess I'm a bit concerned about in the long run is you're obviously going to be organising or lobbying for, or I don't know how much involved you'll be in the training side of things. What about the accreditation? What about the monitoring of aged care services to make sure they are treating LGBTI seniors properly?
The Alliance, just on the training, so you know, the Alliance has received $2 million.
Yes, you said,
from the Commonwealth to do that. So the Alliance will be heavily involved in the training, and that will be gold standard.
Right, but what about the who's doing the accreditation of the homes?
That's a good follow-up question. In terms of accreditation, the LGBTI Health Alliance has joined another body, which is the National Aged Care Alliance, and that's the principal body advising the Commonwealth on accreditation, vocational standards, and a range of other areas. And what we have to do, now that we have a place at the table, is essentially what we've achieved. We've got a place at the table. We have to use our place at the table with all of our abilities and with all of our sort of united voices to press on all of those things. And there's half a dozen or so subgroups and things being followed through, followed through at that level, and accreditation is very important, and it's actually referred to in the national strategy.
Yeah, it's really good to get that in there, and I must say, congratulations on all the hard work you lot have done, because you have made a big difference. How can people like me, James, ordinary citizens, help sort of push this agenda and keep it on the radar? I mean, what can we do to support you in this work?
Well, I wouldn't want to make a shameless plug.
That's what a radio station's
for.
Yes.
but I will anyway. No, I think to be serious, I think it is useful if individuals join the Alliance, because we do have an ageing and aged care working group and an ageing and aged care reference group, and we do take our membership base very seriously. Interested people can come to the conference next week. They can register for one day to particularly follow aged care if they want that, or they can come for the three, of course.
Yes, and to add to what I said earlier on a previous topic, I have put a link through to your conference website on this program's blog, so people can find that via the Joy website.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And in terms of life, I mean, I think just engagement. I mean, what we need, I mean, the longer I've been in this job, Doug, the longer I've realised is how unique it is to have a national LGBTI organisation where people are relatively united. We have 70 member organisations.
I also think it's important, Warren, to remember people need to write to their politicians. They need to get in contact and make this a political issue. So we shouldn't be afraid to pick up the phone and call our local members. They work for us.
Yep, indeed. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Warren, for that. Good luck with the conference. We look forward to seeing you down here.
Yes.
And thank you very much for your time tonight.
Fine. Thanks, Doug. Thanks, James.
Take care. Okay. That's Warren Talbot, the General Manager of the National LGBTI Health Alliance. Don't forget, the Health in Difference conference takes place here in Melbourne starting on Thursday. If you go to the Joy website and navigate your way through to the Rainbow Report blog, you'll find all details of today's program and a link. You can turn from there through to the LGBTI Health Alliance. Now, you're listening to the Doug Pollard's Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9. We've had some rather alarming news doing the rounds. There's a growing outbreak of meningitis among gay men in New York. And Australian gay men travelling to New York are being advised to get vaccinated before they travel, a process that for HIV-positive men requires two shots 8 weeks apart. So you've got to start planning.
The Rainbow Report. News, opinion and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
Joy.
Joy. 94.9.
And this is your host, Doug Pollard, assisted tonight by James Newbury. Now, gay men planning to travel to New York are being advised to get vaccinated against meningitis, and that's everyone, not just HIV positive, although they are at special risk. Rob Blake, the Executive Director of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations, joins us now to tell us the story. Good evening, Rob.
Hi, Doug.
So what's going on here? What's happening in New York that's triggered this alert?
Clearly some of the cases, I think 22 cases since 2010, and this alert has come out from the New York Department of Health. So I think, you know, that reflects their concern, I suppose, of the duration of these cases, but also the significance of them. 7 of those 22 people have, 22 men have died, and that's why we're concerned as well.
Yes, indeed. I understand initially the New York were putting out a warning that it was just dangerous for HIV-positive men, but now they're saying all men who have sex with men who use iPhone apps, bars, and any other means of meeting men, which pretty well
including
covers the
parties,
field.
Yeah.
Yes. So does this mean that the transmission of this meningitis is happening to HIV-negative men as well now?
So I'm unsure of the exact proportions of which men are positive and which men are negative, but there are definitely HIV-negative men getting meningitis as well. And I think the advice that they've given is, you know, it's pretty sensible in terms of, I mean, because it's a vaccination. I mean, so there's a vaccination available.
Yes.
And,
it's something you can protect yourself against.
Absolutely.
Now, you're saying that all men, all gay men, roughly, to put it in shorthand, who are going to New York should get vaccinated, and that makes sense. But we also have quite a bit of traffic coming the other way, don't we, from New York, particularly into Sydney. Should gay men in places like Sydney and Melbourne, the big cities where we do have quite a few American visitors, should we start to be worried?
It's hard to know. I mean, as I said, this has been going on since 2010. There have been, you know, I mean, there haven't been cases here. And, I mean, the interesting thing, I think, is that there also haven't been cases in San Francisco and places like that. It's just purely confined
to New York.
How it's so focused and just staying in New York. And, I mean, you know, I don't, you know, I suppose the researchers who are, you know, trying to track this will have better ideas about that. But, you know, kind of we thought about both of those parts, and I think kind of the key thing is for people who are travelling there. Meningococcal, it's a very fast-acting bacteria, you know, kind of it's a week, it's that sort of time frame. So I think, you know, we would know. It's not like it would be sort of like kind of Lyme.
Oh, no. I've known people who've had caught meningitis, and it's very rapid. And unfortunately, sometimes it's kind of hard to spot the symptoms if you don't know what to look for.
True.
And it gets misdiagnosed on occasion.
Mm. So one of the things that I think the advice about, you know, if your doctor doesn't necessarily know that you've just, you know, you've travelled or something like that, just making sure that they do know that. But as you say, it's very fast. That's why all the way through all of the messaging, it's just act quickly. You know, so if you can prepare, leaving yourself enough time, particularly if you pause, to kind of get both shots of the vaccine, and if anything happens, you know, see a doctor.
James.
Rob, why do these microbes want to kill us? I mean,
well, James, I don't know. I'm not, you know, kind of in terms of, you know, sentient beings. I'm not sure how they sort of go. And the kind of, even, you know, when you look through the, I think some of the things about why it might be, you know, clearly a lowered immunity is always, you know, particularly going to make you susceptible to something like a bacteria. Mm. But all of the other sort of theories, I mean, I can't understand quite how where an app fits in, but you know, clearly it's something where, you know, kind of
because we all carry the meningococcal bacteria, don't we? I mean, it lives in all our throats all the time. Normally, we sort of get along with it quite well. Unless a certain specific set of circumstances turn up and it turns feral on us, which is what seems to be happening here. Are there any signs that this is a mutation, a new strain of meningococcal that's turning up here? And perhaps that's why it's confined to New York?
That could be the case. Like I say, I think the people, well, I'm just assuming that, you know, kind of the infectious disease researchers in New York are looking at some of those questions of what's the actual strain that's causing this, and hopefully we'll know that pretty soon. I think it's interesting that they've, you know, so they've just now, you know, it's become a health alert, and we'd hope through that being able to track particularly better, you know, kind of its history might come through that as well.
Now, just for the sake of the listeners, can you give us a quick rundown of some of the symptoms of meningococcal? Because it can hit in two or three different ways, can't it?
Yeah. I'm not a doctor, and we're not a medical, you know, an advisor.
Okay, where can people find the
advice? People, so people can.
Okay, where can people find details on these symptoms? Then, let's
so
point them
can
at that.
Speak to their doctor if they're concerned about it.
Or they can go and Google.
Call a clinic or call the local AIDS council if they want to get a bit more advice. But like I said, our prevention is.
Oh, it's far better than cure, yes.
Yeah, and like I say, the main focus we're trying to do, the main message is be aware, get a vaccination, you know, kind of, and just be on the safe side, particularly because the vaccinations are not super long-lasting. So, you know, kind of,
that's something I was going to come up to. Do you need a booster if you've already been vaccinated?
Yes, absolutely. Kind of, I think it's 4 or 5 years is something around the time span, so people kind of getting a booster would be a useful thing.
Right. Now, you also mentioned the amount of time necessary if you're HIV positive. What's the difference between what you need to do if you're positive and what to do if you're negative?
Oh, simply that you'd need a double shot of the vaccination 8 weeks apart. So
that means you've got to really plan your trip well in advance.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're HIV positive and you're heading for New York, you've... yes.
How long for negative guys, Rob?
They just need one shot. So in terms of...
It was about 4 weeks, wasn't it, according to the advisory?
So I'm just looking at ours.
Yeah.
Before
the immunity sort of kicks in.
Yeah.
So we should tell our doctors about this health alert, and should we point them to the AFAO advisory on this issue?
No, the doctors have received a health alert from ASHM.
Mm-hmm.
So particularly around that advice around vaccination, you know, what to be vaccinated with and things like that. So that's come through ASHM, which is the doctors' sort of organisation, Society of HIV Medicine.
Okay, great.
Right. So the point is, be prepared, be alert, as
but
usual.
But not alarmed.
but not unduly alarmed, and we're going to have to keep a close eye on this one. Rob, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, sir.
And, you know, do keep us informed if there's anything else that turns up as time goes on, because this is early days for this, and it seems to be the early days of this taking off, so to speak, because it seems to have been quite slow growing, and then all of a sudden now people are starting to get worried. So,
you know, but I think As you say, I think kind of being, worried and just taking some sensible precautions, I think, is the way for people to respond to it. We've alerted, we've spoken to Australian, health authorities just to be sure that it's on their radar to be thinking about it as well, just so that, because, the networks around infectious diseases are, I think work pretty well, but I think we just want to make sure that this is on their radar too.
Right. Well, thanks very much, Rob.
Thank you, Tom.
And fortunately, I'm not planning on going to New York anytime soon, but for anyone who is, please do take care. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks.
That was Rob Lake there of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations. Now, coming up next, Qantas and Emirates executives have been dancing the days away in Dubai, celebrating the alliance that is supposed to save the flying kangaroo. Quite looking forward to seeing it repainted in a hijab anytime soon. But Dubai is not a safe place for LGBTI, not for HIV-positive people, and for a whole lot of other people. This was raised in the upper house by Senator Helen Kroger, the Liberal chief whip, a little while ago, and she joins us on the line in a moment.
The Rainbow Report. News, opinion and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
Joy.
Joy.
94.9.
And this is your host, Doug Pollard, assisted tonight by James Newbury. Now, how do you feel about flying through a country that's arrested an Australian for being rude to an undercover man at the airport and put him in jail for it? That bans virtually every modern drug in its territory, including a lot of HIV drugs. Helen Kroger, Senator Helen Kroger, Liberal Chief Whip, raised this and many other issues recently in the Parliament, and she joins us on the line now. Good evening, Senator.
Good evening, Doug. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks very much for joining us tonight. What are you worried about here? Qantas have put out all sorts of sort of happy, cheery little, don't worry things. You're still worried. Why?
Firstly, congratulations for raising it, because I do think it's a matter that should be ventilated. And more than that, a number are not going anywhere near this topic for whatever reason.
Yes, I had noticed.
Yeah, for whatever reason. Your listeners can make their own minds up about that. My concerns are largely about the increased threats that may exist for the increased numbers who will be transiting through Dubai, and we're probably talking about 1 million people.
Yeah. Mm.
At the moment, there are a number of people who are either detained or locked up in Dubai, and I've been quite vocal in supporting a couple of Victorian businessmen who have been in Dubai under either locked up or under house arrest for over 4 years now.
Good Lord.
And that's a separate matter.
Mm-hmm.
In relation to Dubai itself, though, as there are with many other countries that have different cultural mores and values, the judicial system in Dubai is very, very different to what it is here in Australia. And they have a penal code which essentially provides for a number of things which are legal in Australia to be illegal in Dubai.
Yes, we spent a little time, James and I, going through the DFAT Safe Traveller website.
Yes,
and pages upon pages upon pages of things.
Indeed, indeed. And so you will have seen in that, for instance, the first one that I think would be of particular interest to your listeners is Article 177 of the Penal Code.
Mm-hmm.
That imposes imprisonment of up to 10 years for consensual sex between same-sex partners.
Mm, yes, very concerning, Senator.
And nowhere is anyone hearing that. There is evidence that's been provided by a British charity called Detained in Dubai about individuals, Canadians, there was a British man who have been arrested at the airport for carrying drugs.
Mm. Yeah.
Those drugs, I might add, one of the drugs was, I think it was Celebrex, which is a drug for arthritis.
Indeed.
Another one was tested for, had a urine test for drugs, and they showed positive, that test showed positive for codeine, mm-hmm. and that person was locked up for a month until it was declared that that was not an illegal substance.
Yes, I mean...
You raised the issue of individuals who may be taking drugs for HIV.
Indeed.
I think that is a huge, huge concern, because the question is whether they recognise those drugs as legal in the UAE or not. And I actually don't know the answer to that.
Well, no, we don't either, because we went through the DFAT website and there are, would you believe, 47 pages long list of drugs that are banned in the UAE, including, wow. as you said, anything with codeine in it, like simple panadine and so on and so forth. Doesn't actually mention HIV drugs, and Qantas haven't exactly been forthcoming on this topic. I did ask them if they would provide a spokesperson tonight. I also asked Emirates if they could provide a spokesperson tonight.
Dubai Embassy.
Both of those airlines said anyone who might be authorised to speak on this issue was actually partying in Dubai celebrating the tie-up, and therefore they wouldn't be available.
I find that hard to believe. But
me too.
Anyway, I'll take them at their word.
Senator Kroger, it's not just the drugs with codeine or opiates that we could understand. It's also antidepressants, Stilnox, sleeping pills, and basically everything I need to get through my day. So, you know, how terrified do we need to be as citizens?
Look, I don't think that everybody should go into meltdown about the fact that if they've got panadine in their handbag, in their carry-on luggage, that they will be arrested while they transit through Dubai. But the issue is that there are people who either have been locked up or who are locked up for this very... for actually doing this, and that's the issue. So
indeed,
I'm a mother of two 20-year-old sons. I have cautioned them.
Yeah.
On what they need to consider when they fly, because in this day and age, I think it's fantastic that we all have a capacity to, you know, a lot of people now fly internationally.
Indeed.
And so I actually do think that there is a serious problem here. But what concerns me most is, I'm not trying to run a scare campaign here. All I want is for Qantas to come out and address these individual concerns, which they seem to choose not to do.
Senator, it's also really worrying for me. There is a procedure to get one's prescription medications sorted out. You need to get the Department of Foreign Affairs to endorse a script from your doctor. And a covering letter, which takes 2 weeks. Then you need to take that to the Dubai Embassy in Canberra, where it takes another, 3 weeks, Doug?
I think it's 3 weeks.
3 weeks to issue an authorization to fly, and then you have to fly with all of this original documentation. So we're talking 5 weeks. I have family in the UK. What if I need to attend a funeral quickly? That's a huge issue. You know,
it's crazy. And even if you don't get locked up, just imagine the time that you will be scrutinised at the airport.
Yes, indeed.
And this is the thing that I've actually heard from people that have the stamp of Israel in their passport.
Yes.
It's not that they've been blocked. It is that the way in which they are taken out of the norm, you know, the great big long queue that we all get in when we go through immigration and so on. It's them being taken out of that, treated very differently.
Yes.
And the degree of scrutiny that is applied to these individuals.
Indeed.
And I have to say, you know, in my mind, it's being treated like second class citizens.
Yes.
So it's not just the gay community. There are those who have, in the Jewish community, that have serious concerns.
Pilgrims, perhaps, travelling to the Holy Land, Christian pilgrims?
Absolutely.
Even people who are in de facto relationships, which are not recognised in Dubai, of course, it's actually illegal to share a hotel room with someone you're not married to.
That's correct.
And one of the curious things I found on the DFAT site was that the one thing you don't want to happen to you if you're a woman is to give birth in Dubai if you've been married for less than 9 months, because that means you had sex before you were married and that's illegal.
Mm, No, all these things are absolutely right. The other thing, as a woman or a man, you don't want to be raped in Dubai.
Yes.
Mm.
Because it's the reverse onus of proof.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And particularly for a woman, if a woman is raped, there is an instance not so long ago where a young woman, I think she was 28, 29, her drink was spiked.
Yes.
At a hotel. Mm-hmm. She was raped. She ended up, she was advised to report it to the police, which was the worst advice that she could have been given.
Yeah.
Because on the basis of that, she was locked up.
Yes, and a similar thing.
8 months and was released only because she was given a pardon.
Yes, and a similar thing happened to a French boy who was raped by several men.
Is that right?
It is indeed. No, that's another
one. He was actually charged for homosexuality as well.
Yes, as well. Even though he was raped.
Yes.
As regards HIV medication, just sort of cycling back round to that one, I do have a copy of a letter here that was sent by Olivia Wirth, who's the group executive, Qantas group executive for government and corporate affairs. And I really don't understand this. Perhaps you can help me disentangle it. She says in this letter, which was sent to Nick Xenophon, actually, I am advised that it is not our recommendation to crew that this letter, that's the doctor's letter, should not disclose the visitor's HIV status. So we got a double negative there. I'm not sure what that means. Then she goes on to say, rather this letter need not disclose this information because the process relates to customs, i.e. importing medicine, rather than for a medical purpose.
She needs a lesson in letter writing for starters.
She doesn't she? Yes.
You need a...
I have no idea what that means.
Absolutely.
I have no idea what that means.
I don't know whether she's trying to say that don't disclose you've got HIV because it creates...
That's what she seems to be trying to say. What she seems to be trying to say. Now, we should add at this point that a lot of this stuff, of course, applies to people who are actually staying over in Dubai for one reason or another. And Qantas have said the very reassuring thing that most people don't need to worry so long as they don't leave the airport.
That's correct.
But what happens if you're forced to leave the airport?
Indeed.
What happens if there's a mechanical breakdown? You have to be put up at a local hotel, for example.
And I have raised that directly. Issue with Qantas themselves and haven't received, and the response was that they could put their passengers up in a hotel inside the airport, so they didn't actually have to leave the airport. So as you just said, which happens frequently, there's some sort of mechanical breakdown, and whilst I live in Melbourne, I experienced it firsthand when the airport was shut down a few weeks ago to a storm. And there would have been, I reckon, 1,000 people in the taxi queue trying to get out to find a hotel because there were no hotels near the airport, and the hotel at the Melbourne airport was full.
Yeah.
The same scenario could apply in Dubai. You know, people, one shouldn't feel like second-class citizens, that they shouldn't leave the airport, but I'm sure there are circumstances where accommodation's not available,
Or in other cases, you know, I would suggest by the sounds of this that you think very carefully about leaving the airport and going and staying in a hotel and perhaps sleep on the airport floor. It just seems to be safer, if a lot less comfortable. Senator, we're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time. Thank you very much for joining us tonight, and thank you very much for raising this issue and all power with your elbow to getting more attention to it.
Thank you so much, Doug. Nice to chat.
You too. That was Senator Helen Kroger, the Liberal Chief Whip in the Senate. And that's it for tonight. My thanks also to Rob Lake of AFEO, Warren Talbot of the LGBT Health Alliance, and what was his name again? I've forgotten it. Justin Coonan from Mardi Gras. Shout out to James, of course. Bye, James.
Bye.
Enjoy China. And a shout out also to TJ, who runs the panel and does the podcast. Coming up next, Well. And the aforementioned podcast will be available via the Joy website, which, as I've mentioned several times tonight, also has links to the program blog. I'll see you same time next week with another Rainbow Report.
Joy 94.9.
That was The Rainbow Report with your host, Doug Pollard. Podcasts from the show will be available soon at joy.org.au. The Rainbow Report, a Joy 94.9 news and current affairs production.
The perfect mix of music, news and interviews. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.